Hello, everybody, and welcome to a special programme here on RadioLeMond.com. I'm John Hindhoff, and joining me live from America, well, I hope he is at least, is our North American correspondent, Declan Brennan. Hello, Dex.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. I'm very well indeed. And do we find you fit and ready to go as we're ready to talk stock cars?
Oh, yes. We've had a long enough break where I even watched the ARCA race on Saturday, which, funnily enough, gave me one or two interesting little hints about what might happen come this Sunday for the Daytona 500 itself. But yes, we've already had a smattering of stock car racing, so I'm quite excited for the season to come, I have to say.
Right, well, before we start talking about what to expect in the season about to start, let's find out what's changed from a technical perspective. Tim Gray can't be with us in person, but he's left us rather zen-like with a few bits and pieces, including this.
For the 2012 season, NASCAR are once again changing the rules to spice up the show. They're aiming for a better, more competitive, more entertaining race series. And they're starting with a restrictor plate for those races that warrant it, now slightly smaller. The vertical blade on the roof of the car is taller to prevent cars rolling. The rear spoiler is lower and has a slight curve to it, all in the interests of better aerodynamics. The radiator is now 3 gallons smaller, and the catch tank is also smaller, both of these changes to try and reduce the time drivers can stay behind each other before overheating. In line with these changes is the opening for the radiator at the front of the car, very high in relationship to previous years, another effort to keep cars from running nose to tail for very long. And drivers will no longer be able to talk to each other on the radio, only talking to their spotter and pit crew. Last year's Daytona 500 winner Trevor Bayne says whatever they do with the rules, he's still going to race.
To me, it's just racing. So whatever, however we're racing, we're gonna be there to win, and it's going to be competitive. So as long as it's not a car every 5 seconds spread out on the track, then it's still racing to me. And whether it's a pack or two cars pushing, you just got to be the best guy at figuring it out and try to go for it.
So that's Trevor Bayne and Tim explaining some of the changes that will be going on this year, Declan. So, rules changes. It seems an almost perennial thing, doesn't it, for NASCAR? And even the Sprint Cup have weighed in again this year with those changes, as Tim described it. Will they have the desired effect, I suppose, is the first question we've got to ask.
Well, they very much will. They very much will, because they are... almost, if you listen to them again, you will suddenly dawn on you that they are entirely based around the super speedway and restrictor plate races in terms of what they're trying to achieve. Notice they're talking about radiator sizes and how quickly the car will overheat, and that is along with radio communication between drivers. Almost entirely, that is a set of rules designed to prevent tandem racing. And I think from what we've seen already with regards to the All-Star race, the Budweiser shootout on last Saturday, that the rules have already taken effect. We're already seeing that change. I will say there's one or two things that I'd be a little bit dubious about, or not dubious, but just concerned about, would be particularly the reduction of the spoiler, which is going to take downforce off the rear. It'll certainly make the cars a little quicker. They'll be a little slicker through the air, and that's one that we've already seen in terms of the way the cars performed last Saturday. Obviously, we need to look at that on different circuits, but yes. it's from a point of view of what they're trying to do with regards to super speedways. I think it's already been proved that these rules have worked, and we're not going to see tandem racing. Although, on saying that, we will see tandem racing right at the end.
Oh yeah!
If somebody, I think I mentioned it on the Midweek Motorsport Facebook page a couple of days ago, is that right at the end of a race, we are still going to see somebody getting, I was once described, the push from God when Kurt Busch pushed his teammate Ron Newman to victory in the 08 Daytona 500. So therefore, somebody at the end will be willing to blow their car up, literally to push their teammate across the line. But that is the risk you're going to have to take, because you really will not be able to stay tucked in behind somebody for very long. You will really overheat quickly. So
one point that I noticed, Dex, from the racing we've seen so far, is that I hear what everybody's saying, and particularly what you've just said about the rear spoiler. However, bizarrely, it does look like the car can be saved depending on how good you are, obviously, from the most amazingly bizarre and bonkers angles, as we saw with Kurt Busch, wasn't it?
Kyle Busch,
who got very...
He hit twice in the space of 5 seconds. But you have to remember, you can't confuse regular racing drivers with Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch is a remarkable... he is ridiculously talented. I'd say that's more to do with the regulations in terms of Kyle Busch's ability. If you could set a set of regs that every driver could have savant-like driving talent, then they'd all be able to do that. But no, that's I'm not sure how much of that was the car and how much of that was him. I will say is that, but yeah, the two saves that he made on his way to winning last Saturday night were absolutely out of this world, and I'm really, it's hard to say how much was the car and how much was him. I think a lot of it was him, and I think he also physics came into play in terms of where on the track he was.
Very true.
The angle of the banking, as because he was quite low down when he did it. But we'll have to. My issue would be, particularly with pack racing, is that I do see, even though we now have a flatter Daytona than we used to, it's less bumpy, I think the cars are still going to be maybe as skittish as they were before the surface was repaved. So we will still see packs together with cars' tail ends jumping slightly in and out, you know, which is in a big pack can be a bit scary, but yes. I don't think that's going to be removed. Certainly, even though we have a smoother surface to race on.
That's Declan Brennan. I'm John Hindhoff. Welcome along if you are just joining us. It's our look at the NASCAR Sprint Cup. That's the rules. So let's move on to the drivers who'll be racing for the Cup this season. Logical to start with the number of the car. Number one, normally, of course, in any other form of racing, would signify last year's champion. Not in NASCAR circles. You get a number and stick with it. However, Jamie McMurray is a former winner of the opening race, the Daytona 500.
Well, I get reminded a lot because... Since I am a father, Carter likes to play in the office in our home, and that's where the trophy is. So so we play in there a lot, and I get to look at that a lot. And it's still really cool to think that that you've won that race. And you know, I look back at that day a lot, and it's one of the coolest days of my life.
Jamie McMurray reminiscing there about winning on the big 2.5 miles of Daytona. Tell me about McMurray then. Has he got a chance this year? I've won money on Jamie McMurray, but it was a very long time ago.
Rotten. He had a rotten season last year. There is no two ways about it. He had a absolutely rotten year. He finished 27th. He should be number 27. He finished 27th in points. If you think about it, 27th in points is kind of dancing with, you know, that top 35, losing your automatic lock-in for the first five races, which is kind of extraordinary when you think about it. And particularly when we come to talk about the size of the fields regularly in Sprint Cup races. For Jamie McMurray to finish 27th is shocking, particularly considering he's running for a team that should be capable of winning races in Earnhardt Ganassi Racing. Didn't trouble the scorers at all this year. Never looked like winning. Never looked like parlaying some of the form that he'd had in previous years. Particularly what happened, we've all talked about the Jamie McMurray story before. He won very early, which is oftentimes the worst thing that can happen to you. It becomes a big millstone stroke albatross around your neck, maybe even a millstone shaped albatross, or an albatross shaped
millstone. Yes.
And he then struggled, moved from team to team, went from Roush from Ganassi to Roush and back to Ganassi. Then seemed to pick up a bit of form and picked up some wins and looked like he was ready to start contesting again. And it really was a very poor year. He's an awful lot to prove. He's on a long-term contract. You'd like to think that he hasn't kind of settled in, if you know, and got his feet comfortable under the desk. The interesting thing, and we've said this about Ganassi before, is they're so well sponsored for the most part, and they've got such loyal sponsors. And with NASCAR being an event where if you have a name and you have a profile, that's almost enough. Winning isn't always the most important thing.
Bizarre.
It's one of those things where I'd like to think that he's not comfortable, and it's not just because they've got like good loyal sponsors. But he does need to up his game this year, and he is absolutely capable of doing it because he has won races yeah. both on restricted plate and on big. He's won at Charlotte. He's won on restricted plate tracks. He can win on pretty much on any of the high speed tracks. He can win.
McMurray, arguably, like many of the top drivers, running a Chevrolet this season. So let's move on to some more bow tie teams. Hendrick Motorsport, Jeff Gordon, and Dale Earnhardt this year, joined by none other than that well known spelling error, Casey Kahane. Casey K.
I'm excited.
This is a.
Forward to the opportunity to drive for Hendrick Motorsports for a year and a half now, and it's getting close, you know. I mean, a year and a half ago it seemed like forever till I'll be in the five, and now it's here, and you know, I can't wait to get started.
With Jeff Gordon and Dale Earnhardt, you talked about names being sometimes enough. Well, Hendrick, Gordon and Earnhardt Jr., surely that's as close to a dream team as you can get in NASCAR, then, despite any results or lack thereof.
Well, the Casey Kane thing, John, is extremely interesting because Casey Kane got this drive based on effectively... I would argue performances that we haven't seen in about 4 years. He is now around, as much as he's still the young kind of, oftentimes you think of him as the young, you know, marketable up and coming guy, but he's been around since 05, really, 06. And he won a lot early in his career when he was running for Dodge with Kenny Francis as his crew chief. And the interesting thing is he kind of, his career kind of mirrored the struggles of that team, which was Everton, which obviously became Gillette Everton, which then became became Petty, and you know, and they struggled for money, and then he ended up in this very bizarre situation.
Did it become Lotus Renault at some stage as well, and then Renault Lotus, then Lotus, then Renault,
then Tolman, then back to Tyrrell, and then
yes, exactly.
And it's a sweeping brush that's been around for 40 years with 12 Correct. Different handles and 16 heads. And the issue is, of course, then he weirdly got loaned out. Him and his engineer got loaned out last year to a lame duck team, as they became, because he was running for Red Bull Toyota, who then, in the middle of the season, decided they were pulling out at the end of the year. This is a huge opportunity for him. Both these men, and I'm talking about both Kane and Kenny Francis, because they come as a package, a bit like Jimmy Tarbuck and Kenny Lynch. They come as a package deal, and both could totally thrive in this environment. It's a great environment for drivers and engineers, particularly for crew chiefs, because we all know what a school and what an environment Hendrick has been in yes. terms of the development of crew chiefs. So it's a brilliant environment for him. But the interesting thing is he hasn't been, I don't think he's been pushed anywhere for probably 5 years in terms of having pressure with better teammates.
How will he take being with Jeff Gordon and Dale Earnhardt Jr.? Because arguably they are two of the biggest names, certainly two of the biggest names that haven't won anything for a while.
Yeah, it's funnily enough, Ken, Gordon and Junior, you know, are weirdly, it's extraordinary that you'd rope these guys together. But in some respects, you have to, because they're all generally underperforming, where Jeff Gordon, you know, has found a little bit of winning form in the last year or two. But all of them effectively are now in a team that expects to win all the time and hasn't been doing nearly enough of that. I think Kane will do that. Very big year for him. The number five hasn't performed for a while. Mark Martin certainly didn't perform in it when he came back last year. Huge opportunity for Kane.
Next Chevy team I want to discuss with you, Declan, is Richard Childress Racing, RC Racing. Nick's got that Twitter account, of course. Paul Menard, Jeff Burton and Kevin Harvick, who we'll hear from first of all.
We've made what we felt are the best decisions to try to, as an organization, take ourselves from, you know, finishing third to win a championship. So I feel like, you know, we may go out and it all may just crumble. But, you know, with what we had underneath us and the things that we feel this is with, feel like the best opportunity that we've built for ourselves over the winter.
So Kevin Harvick there didn't sound super, super confident. Paul Menard and Jeff Burton, along with the inimitable Richard Childress and the kind of organisation and logistical background that brings, Declan, would make you think that they should get some kind of results over the season.
Well, This is a really peculiar one because they did what many fans of stick and ball sports will be familiar with. They Kevin Harvick was the Green Bay Packers this year. he dominated the regular season and then as they say over here, threw up on his own shoes in the playoffs.
Excellent.
He if you think about what he did, was he became the number one seed last year. He and Kyle Busch both had four wins. They went in into the chase with a significant lead in terms of the way the point system worked, and basically had 12-point lead over the champion Tony Stewart, as it turned out, who beat him by 58 points. So that was a 70-point turnaround with this point scoring system is absolutely extraordinary. And the basis of it was he didn't really turn any of parlay any of that success in the regular season into the postseason. Two top fives, I beg your pardon, that would be two top fives and three top tens in the chase isn't enough. Really, no. It simply wasn't enough. They made radical surgery, or they've had radical surgery this year in terms of Todd Berrier, his crew chief, is gone. They brought in Shane Wilson, who I really don't know an awful lot about. He came from the Clint Boyer's 33 team, which is gone. Clint Boyer gone to Michael Waltrip Racing, and the 33 car is going to kind of run in piecemeal form this year. So they've kind of taken some of the bits from that team and bolted them into his. He obviously is the lead car there. He should be winning, and he does win a lot of races, and he needs to turn all of that form that he can show all year into form in the. And it wasn't just a case of Carl Edwards and Tony Stewart performing better. He literally just didn't perform nearly well enough in the chase.
And Menard, you look at Menard, though. I mean, just underlining what you're saying there, Menard got his first victory last year.
Yeah, we will say that I would say that it was a wonderful win for him to win on such a big stage at the Brickyard. But Menard, absolutely, let's not make no mistakes about this. Menard's money from his father's empire is a great help to the team. Although, as you've said before, he is absolutely turning himself into a driver who really can perform and has every right to perform on the big stage.
The Pedro Diniz of NASCAR.
Yeah, exactly. As you said before, the Pedro Diniz of NASCAR.
Look it up if you don't know.
Jeff Burton is Jeff Burton. Although they've made changes too. They brought in Drew Blickensterver from who was on the now semi-defunct number six Roush entry. So they've changed. There's been a few engineering changes. But the interesting thing I think about this team is that I think there is, and we'll finish with this, there's a cloud hanging over, particularly Burton, I think, in the form of Austin Dillon, who is Richard Childress's grandson, who was fantastic in trucks, very, very young, a man who's running... they think enough of for him to be running the number three, which he ran in trucks. He'll be running it again in
Nationwide.
In Nationwide, I expect him to do very big things in Nationwide, and that's a driver who sooner rather than later will be embraced into the bosom of the Richard Childress Racing Sprint Cup family, and somebody is going to have to go. And I would imagine Jeff Burton has a pretty big year. He's getting on a little bit. Granted, he performs at a pretty high level, but I think he might be looking over his shoulder a little bit with regards to Austin Dillon coming along.
Another team running Chevrolet, Stuart Haas, the reigning champion, says the team hasn't been complacent over the winter.
In all honesty, I mean, we've still been riding that high, but I mean, we really didn't sit there and say, hey, we're celebrating a championship. That lasted through the banquet, and it was right back to work. I mean, we were immediately right back on the job of trying to figure out how to do the same thing this year, and it was easy to do that, having Zippy come on board and Steve Addington come on board, and guys that weren't really with us when we won the championship at the end of the year. So, I mean, their focus was what we were going to do this year. So it kind of got the whole mindset of the shop to not get lazy and think about what we accomplished last year and get working
I
on what we can do to
expect everything out of myself. You know, I look at it that the reason I made this...
And we'll stop AJ from talking just for the moment.
That's impossible. That is absolutely impossible. Yes. You cannot stop AJ from talking.
He even managed to interrupt Tony Stewart there. Let's talk Tony Stewart and Ryan Newman. We'll leave the rookie in that team to later on in the show, and we'll explain that later on. So Stewart Haas, fantastic championship last year. Couldn't have been happier. I loved the attitude from Tony Stewart and everybody. And quite clearly, as again we said, particularly running into and through the chase, a very, very popular winner in the paddock.
Absolutely.
Can they repeat?
Yes, and I'll tell you why. Because they won despite themselves last year. He won while he was clearly not happy with his corporate structure, if you will. He said before the chase came along that he needed a competition director. They didn't get one. He clearly wasn't, for whatever reason, wasn't fully comfortable with Darien Grubb, despite the fact that they went on and won a championship. So he's had pretty much severely corrective surgery. I don't mean a lap band. I mean he's brought in his old buddy Greg Zibidelli from his time, his championship winning time at the number 20 Joe Gibbs team. He becomes competition director, which is again a role that he said he needed filling. His championship winning crew chief Darien Grubb is gone to be replaced by Steve Addington. Now, Steve Addington, in a former life, clearly, was a black cat that walked under a ladder, because Steve Addington...
And brought a mirror.
Yes, exactly.
And stepped on every crack in the pavement as he was doing it.
Exactly. The reason being, because Steve Addington has had, for the last few years, he has been the crew chief for Kurt Busch, Kyle Busch, and now he moves from Kurt Busch to Tony Stewart. And Tony Stewart, we know how fiery he is. And I would suggest it's like jumping from the frying pan into another larger frying pan that's using a lot more lard.
Yes.
Basically. It's a remarkable thing.
Jumping from the frying pan into the thermic lance. Exactly. Not just the fire.
Exactly. Now, the thing is... Stewart is clearly happy about this, and it's something he's wanted to do for a while. The Zibidelli move one thinks was effectively Zibidelli was playing his time out with Joey Logano on gardening leave, and when we get to talk to about Joey Logano, we can probably that probably makes a little bit more sense in terms of Logano's performance, and we now have a situation where that team is as strong behind the scenes and in the front office, as they say, or on the pit box, as they could possibly be, and it's all up to Stewart now to move with a degree of momentum from last season into this season, and I expect that to happen, and I expect it to happen. I actually expect it to happen this weekend, I think he's brilliantly manoeuvred himself into a position where he can have a proper championship run from the off, and he doesn't have to, you know, get to week 26 of the season struggling for form, and I don't think that's going to be the case.
It's interesting. It's an odd team that I think Stewart clearly is on the crest of a wave. Will the changes make a big difference? Well, as you alluded to, Dex, I think because they've been instigated by Tony himself, he feels that the team's moving the right way. Ryan Newman, I just don't know what to say about Ryan. He's been, you know, there or thereabouts, but he hasn't really delivered, has he? Interesting.
Not for that team, but then that might make a difference too. With there is the opportunity now with an overall change in engineering and crew chief philosophy that the 39 car has an opportunity to win. He's made the chase. He's really, really solid. You cannot question anything about that team in terms of they have full. They're not wanting for sponsorship.
No.
They've got a solid crew chief now in Tony Gibson. They obviously are running Hendrick chassis and motors. There's nothing that you cannot. None of those pieces don't fit, and it's about him just performing a little bit better. As he said, he made the chase. He just needs to somehow find a little bit more of the form that he had in 04, for example, about in 03 when he was a multi race winner and literally won so many races, didn't win the title. They changed the series format because of him, and I think maybe We'll see early in the season if the Zipadelli influence is enough to make the changes on the track for the 39 team.
You're listening to a special. It's John Hindorf and Declan Brennan talking NASCAR Sprint Cup. We're still in the midst of the Chevrolet runners. We'll move on to Dodge and AJ, who you got a quick preview of, thanks to my bad finger trouble in just a couple of minutes ago. Before we move off Chevrolet, Jimmy Johnson didn't quite make it another championship this year, Dex, but he's got to be still one of, if not the favourite, to sneak it back this year. I mean, it'd be a foolish man who bets against him.
He's the bookie's favourite.
Is he?
Yes, he is. He kind of has to be, really. When you've won 6 of the last 7 championships and you're still running with exactly the same team. Last year was a slight anomaly insofar as he had 2 wins and was looking for maybe a little bit of form, or just felt the pressure. You know, we have this. We've seen this.
He
with
does
Tiger
that
Woods.
Thing, though. We've said it before. He does that thing where, you know, and our American listeners will understand this possibly more than our European ones, not because this is NASCAR, but he plays the playoffs very, very well indeed. He is great in the chase.
Yes, he is. But what's interesting, John, is that what's happened in terms of maybe he hasn't, he's sitting on his laurels would be overstating it, but he may have kind of taken a breath this year a little bit and everybody caught up. It's a little bit like, after 5 or 6 years with Tiger Woods, people started, you know, winning a few more majors because he made everybody better. He made everybody, you know, people had to get better. People have had to get sharper in the garage, on the track, in the race shop to beat Jimmy Johnson. And that's clearly happened. And we've seen an upturn in form of a number of people who were regular winners or regular competitors before who are now winning, like Kevin Harvick.
Is there also, Dex, a move? And I'm not saying that people don't care about the first part of the season. That would be fatuous. But is there a move that, having seen the way that Jimmy has done things in the past, and let's be honest, Tony Stewart barely got into the chase and was lucky to be there and said so himself, and then went on to have a fantastic 10-race chase series. Have other people seen how Jimmy has won his championships and thought, do you know, guys, we need to be working towards those venues at the end of the year. We need to just make sure we're in the top 12, and then we'll take it from there.
It's funny, John, because NASCAR has this belief, and they certainly position themselves and the way they phrase things, that they feel like they're just another one of the major stick and ball sports in terms of their phraseology, and finding form going into the playoffs is never a good thing. You never want to fall into the playoffs, or you never want to do exactly what Tony Stewart and the New York Giants did this year, both of whom fell into the playoffs and then won it all. But you don't want to do that. And the perfect example is, if you go back to 2005, Johnson had a dominant year. They were very, very competitive, probably the best team in 2005, and took their foot off the gas when they were locked into the chase with about 5 or 6 races to go. They admitted they kind of played around with stuff in preparation for the chase, and they lost their focus. And he didn't win the title and lost the title in 2005. They came back, obviously, with a vengeance in 2006, and the rest is history. So I think it's important that yes, there will be times during the season where if a win is getting away from you, or if you don't have a car, if the car doesn't come off the truck competitive and you can't find the sweet spot, you're not going to worry as much. But what you need to do is, generally, your performance level has to remain high. And that would be the same for anybody. I think the idea of catching lightning in a bottle, like Tony Stewart did, is no blueprint for winning a title. That's an extraordinary achievement. I don't think that'll happen again.
So the key Chevrolet runners there, as we've run through here on our look at the NASCAR Sprint Cup, Declan Brennan and John Hindorf here. We'll move on to Dodge. A little preview, sneak preview of what you're going to hear next. 2 cars that we want to talk about here: Brad Keselowski and AJ Allmendinger, who's optimistic, as many people are at this time of the season, that it'll be a good season for him.
I expect everything out of myself. You know, I look at it that the reason I made this move was because I got to make the next step in my career, and the next step is win races, make the chase. I mean, I was 13th spot when the chase started last year, so I was one out, you know, and you look at what the team did as an organization last year, putting both cars in the chase. To me, it's and Shell Pennzoil, the drivers they've had in their race car, to me, is their championship and race-winning guys. So my expectation is on myself.
Dodge, AJ, and Keselowski, can they challenge the might of Chevrolet?
Yes, they can, because despite the fact that it's a small team, but it is Penske. So let's not beat around the bush. It's Penske. The interesting thing is Dodge has upped its commitment marketing wise and spend. So I think what we're going to see is the Dodge, the very few Dodge teams, i.e. effectively just Penske, running with enough investment from their manufacturer to really be able to compete, because they've been competitive over the last number of years, but just not consistently and not at every track and not in a way that that you know almost to the point where you look at Penske in every other form of racing they've competed in recently in terms of the IndyCar and the LMS and even Grand Am to some extent, and they won races. And I think you expect a little bit more from Penske. And I think we're going to get it this year, because I think the investment is up. I think the new owners understand the power and the marketing platform that NASCAR is. And obviously, don't forget the last few years as Dodge was in trouble, the budgets were being cut drastically from their NASCAR program. And we also have a situation where Penske is running with two outstanding young drivers.
Yeah.
Outstanding. Look, it's standing in different ways. Keselowski's now a proven and regular winner. I don't think we've anything to say about him other than that he now has proven he can win anywhere. I think we've seen a maturation towards the end of the year when he had to fight his way into the chase. We saw a little bit more of a cool-headed version of the driver that we saw burst onto the scene with that win at Talladega when Carl Edwards nearly flew into the stand a couple of years ago. He's a very different driver. He's much calmer. When you think back to the Edwards Keselowski issue at Atlanta when they had that Edwards came out and punted him into the fence, and that was pretty disastrous. And that was effectively all about a build up of tension that, to be perfectly honest, many of the paddock would have felt with regards to Keselowski, that he was wild, he was aggressive, overly so. I think he's calmed down. He's matured pretty quickly to the point where now he's obviously the lead driver in that team. Then he's in the number two. He's in the Miller car. He's got that's the old Rusty Wallace car. So he's got a lot of pressure on him to compete, and I think he'll do it. I think this is a really big year for Keselowski, and I think he's going to be absolutely a factor all year and definitely a threat come chase time. The issue, of course, is AJ. Whether AJ can now turn this platform and this opportunity into race wins, and I think he can. And I really don't believe it's a case of only on the road courses. I think he'll absolutely win at least once in on an oval.
Very quickly on AJ, what's changed then?
It's just the car. He's now, I think this year he's got the platform. He's got enough experience now. The learning curve and the learning process in stock cars is very long and very tough. Look at Marcus Ambrose, and and you can see with both Ambrose and Allmendinger that the curve was going upwards, and the performance level and the results were getting better and better and all the time. And it's a slow process, and there's a lot to learn, and there's an awful lot. This is no driver is going to jump into one of these cars from another series and start winning. And in this case, it's taken him several years, and it looks like his curve is still in the ascendancy. And I think this is the year that he'll break out.
Well, from imported from Detroit for Dodge to a real import, Toyota, who've made steady progress since entering NASCAR a few years ago now. Once again, two Toyota teams for the 2012 Sprint Cup season, Michael Waltrip Racing and Joe Gibbs Racing. And Joe Gibbs, welcome Clint Bowyer to the team.
We've been fortunate enough to have quite a bit of testing, a lot more than usual, believe it or not. So we were fortunate enough to have a tire test. We came down here to Florida early and went to New Smyrna down the road here and got a short track test. We were at Disney World testing, and really not to work on our equipment, just more so just to work on communication, getting the team, you know, to work as one and work on that camaraderie. I mean, that's so important in this sport. You hear us talk about it all the time, but I'm telling you, these cars are so even on the racetrack that what makes up the difference is the communication and the decisions that are made to set that car up for any given Sunday.
That's an interesting point, isn't it? Because, you know, I remember when we talked about Toyota entering in, first of all, the trucks a few years ago on Midweek Motorsport and saying what a Pandora's box that NASCAR had opened. Are you slightly surprised that Toyota haven't taken the big prize, any of the really big prizes in NASCAR before now? And what's their prospects for the Toyota teams this year?
Well, I'm not surprised to some extent because the Gibbs organization, particularly, don't forget, has Kyle Busch. So I'm not surprised they haven't won anything. Now, that's been slightly unfair, but they didn't have Tony Stewart for very long. It went through a period with Tony Stewart was at Gibbs that he just felt he wasn't quite as interested or as driven. We may be a case that he had mentally checked out, even by the time Toyota had got there with regards to his future. Kyle Busch was still learning his craft, and there were also at a time when there was the likes of Stremme and Yaley were running with that team, and they just really weren't that good. They've changed a lot of things. That this is a year that Toyota should really, Kyle Busch really should be winning on an awful lot of races. He should be going into the, you know, you'd expect the way he drives that he should be going into the chase as the number one seed. If he can calm down and if he can really learn how to channel his aggression and channel it into performance on the track, then he literally shouldn't be beaten. But really, the only person who knows what's going on in Kyle Busch's head is Kyle Busch, and the only person...
I'm not sure he knows.
Well, the thing is, and he's in total control of in some respects. He's so talented and so quick. He is in control of where this championship hunt goes if he wants to be. And the thing is, he has never learned. He's kind of Gilles Villeneuve or you know, there's plenty of guys like him in other disciplines who just have never ever settled down and worked out how to get the best of their own ability. And that's absolutely the case with Kyle Busch. Logano is a fascinating case within that team because Zipadelli's gone. Jason Ratcliffe is in as his crew chief. This is the last year of his contract. Could this be, unfortunately, a term, let's say, how we put it? Like he came in as sliced bread. And if he doesn't really work this year, he could be toast.
Very good.
Quite frankly. I'm serious because he's got... Ratcliffe obviously came from the 18 Nationwide car where he knew he was able to get... he could jump from Denny Hamlin running the 18 car in Nationwide to Kyle Busch, and he won easily. He could transition from one driver to the other. I don't think he'll have any problem working with Logano. It's whether Logano actually has the ultimate ability that we saw, whether he's never really converted the promise he has one win that was in a rain-shortened race at New Hampshire. He could be out of a job at the end of the year. It's not like there isn't talent coming in through the junior ranks. You know, Joe Gibbs have got Brian Scott knocking on the door in Nationwide. I think that Logano has a lot to prove this year. Boyer will probably be the same Clint Boris. Really, really consistent. Will challenge certainly for wins during the year. And it could one of these drivers who you would not be surprised to see in the chase. He's a kind of a really steady hand. And that works for sponsors. And certainly part of the reason that they've got a new sponsor in 5-Hour Energy and in what was the 00 team. And this is obviously Michael Waltrip. And Michael Waltrip Racing, as we well know, are almost more a marketing platform than a race team. They're a marketing platform that happens to have fairly competitive drivers. And when you add him into Martin Truex, that kind of is a really, really great fit for that organization. Yes. It's going to give them relevance, going to give them a chance to run up the front. That'll keep their sponsors happy, but I'm not sure necessarily they're drivers that are going to win you a title.
Before we get letters in, there are two Ford teams this season. The Blue Oval represented by Roush to start with, who've got Greg Biffle and Carl Edwards as their drivers. Now, Carl Edwards says that coming so close to winning the 2011 title was both humbling and motivating for him.
I wanted to win that championship more than anything, but it was also very humbling and very motivating at the same time to know that we could perform that well, that we could push Tony Stewart and those guys to have to win half of the chase races to beat us. And I look back on it with a lot of pride, knowing that our whole team was, I mean, we performed almost flawlessly that last event under that huge pressure. So I'm hoping that we get that same chance this year. I'm hoping that we go into Homestead with a shot to win this thing. We can apply what we learn, and I think we're going to be tough to beat.
That's a good point that he brings up as well, actually. Tim picking up some great clips for us from the drivers, because that could go either way, Dex, couldn't it? You get so close, you've got one hand on the trophy almost, as Edwards did last year after, let's be honest, what's been a couple of pretty poor, not even average series, pretty poor seasons for Carl Edwards and the Aflac car. He can use that as a stepping stone and say, close but no cigar, I know how to get there, or it could just be, if we didn't win it last year, we're never going to win it.
Well, the thing is, I think it's going to be a positive for him, because he performed that well with only one win. His wins over the last, you know, 2-3 years are very few and far between. Weirdly, his performance levels remain, you know, at an elite level. We even talk about the fact that his average finishing position in the chase was the best we've ever seen, and he still lost it, and he lost it ultimately because of the tiebreaker, because he didn't have enough wins.
Yeah.
And that's something that has to change. Now, interestingly, organizationally, there's been a fundamental change at Roush. Roush is having problems, and Ford, maybe this is an indication of why Ford are now slightly more profitable as a company. Roush has effectively reduced to 3 cars full time. They want to run the 6 car as often as they can for Ricky Stenhouse, the nationwide champion. Right now, they only have the money to run it at the Daytona 500 with EcoBoost on the car, which is rather ironic. And they're effectively a 3 car team. 3 cars with 3 drivers, all who will make the chase, all who should make the chase, and who all have to turn a consistent performance into wins in those last 10 races. And that's something that they've found difficult to do for pretty much the last decade. Greg Biffle, you know, always there or thereabouts, doesn't win enough races. Matt Kenseth is Matt Kenseth. Matt Kenseth isn't programmed to win enough races. Matt Kenseth, had 2 wins last year. Biffle actually missed the chase last year. Yeah. Didn't have a win. They need to make double their efforts to make what they have just work in a more effective way at the front, and that means they've got to win more. I think the number one driver again will be Carl Edwards, and I think he will win races. Matt Kenseth will do what Matt Kenseth does, and he'll make the chase. And I think Biffle needs to find something, because Biffle was always a winner and was a regular threat to win races and championships in the past, and I think he needs to be again. But I think the reduction in teams down to effectively a 3-car team could give them the focus they need, and this could be a very, very good year for Ford.
You mentioned Kenseth there, and that brings us to the other Ford team, Petty with Ambrose, Kenseth, Reagan, all in there as well. The Petty name does still stand for something, Declan. There's no doubt about that. Whichever way you look at it, again, in a sport that's littered with dynasties, that's one of them. But can Petty Enterprises pull something out this year?
I do believe they can, and let's get back to the same curve that AJ was on. I think Marcus Ambrose has been on that, and we even saw it a little bit in terms of his performance. Granted, he's in a Ford with Roush's power, but he even performed well last Saturday. I do believe this is the year that eyes get really, really opened by fans when it comes to particularly Marcus Ambrose. And I think he'll win on an oval, and I think he will be a threat, and he will certainly be in the mix to make the chase come September. With regards to I think that their focus has to be on him because, extraordinary as we've talked about before, this team really doesn't really just have enough firepower, enough infrastructure, enough money to campaign on all fronts. But I certainly think of all of the drivers, I think Marcus Ambrose is the one who's going to absolutely come good this year, and he will be a major, major surprise, I think, to people. And I think
Does he make the chase?
I think he does, yeah. I think we'll see him make the chase, absolutely.
Well, we've looked at the big multi-car entry so far, but there's a number of smaller teams as well with just a single entry. Tim Gray takes a look at them, starting with the JTG Doherty Racing Equipe.
Former Sprint Cup champion Bobby Labonte returns to a revitalised and building number 47 team. Labonte was 29th in points in the team's Toyotas last season, but logged only two top tens at Daytona and Loudon. Significant improvement is expected this year with the arrival of a new crew chief and competition director Todd Berrier, who landed at JTG after being booted by Richard Childress Racing. JTG is operating from its own shop after leaving its former headquarters at Michael Waltrip Racing, and Labonte says he's amazed at how the new base has changed since the end of last year.
Those guys have done a lot of work in the off-season. I think September 15th there wasn't anything in the race shop, and they built jigs, they built cars, they built rooms, and you know, from shock rooms to electrical rooms to engineering office, and so it's a lot of work that's happened that, you know, wasn't even included in building race cars. So, you know, but that being said, I think that you know, they bought some cars from MWR, and Todd's made some you know, what he's used to improvements as far as what, you know, what he's accustomed to, meaning that, you know, it's just what he was been used to for all these years, and that he understands, and they did a lot of work on that, and you know, just putting all the right people in the right places. Pit crew guys worked real hard. I saw them yesterday working out when I got there, and I got there just in time to see them done. I was hated I couldn't join in, but oh well. And but yeah, I mean, you know, we get down to the races, the racetrack, and the finish or the result or the how you run is the barometer. But you know, I think that you know, you never know. Daytona's a kind of its own thing, and we get to Phoenix and Vegas and Fontana and Bristol and Martinsville, and, you know, we'll have a better feeling of what, or we'll understand more about what we're, you know, what we're up against, our weaknesses and our strengths, hopefully.
Germain Racing is back in the Sprint Cup Series with driver Casey Mears, who finished 31st in points last season. He had a top finish of 12th. The team is switching from Toyotas to Fords, and Booty Barker will continue as crew chief. Mears had a Sprint Cup victory in 2007, but probably will struggle to reach that level this season. Phoenix Racing is a single-car team, but it's likely to generate more publicity than some multi-car operations this season. Kurt Busch relocated to the Phoenix shop in Spartanburg, South Carolina, after leaving Penske Racing at the end of a controversial 2011. Phoenix gets its cars and engines from Hendrick Motorsports, but the team has a very small workforce, 18 employees, and Busch might find himself travelling a rough road, particularly in comparison to his former homes at Penske and Roush Fenway. The team plans to shoot for enough top 5 and top 10 finishes, with maybe a win or two along the way, to qualify for the chase, but a top 20 point finish is a more realistic goal. Kurt says car owner James Finch's past performances give him hope on super speedways this year.
The way that James Finch loves these restrictor plate races, we build really good cars for this effort. So this is one of our best chances to win, and it's one of my best chances over all the years. I mean, I've been with Roush, been with Penske, now with James Finch and Phoenix Racing, to have a Hendrick motor under the hood and a chassis and a body, I'm really stoked about this.
Furniture Row Racing team owner Barney Visser turned an unlikely adventure, running a Sprint Cup team from Denver, Colorado, into a success last season as driver Reagan Smith scored Furniture Row's first victory in the Southern 500 at Darlington Raceway. Smith finished 26th in Sprint Cup points and had 5 top 10 runs. He figures to have a decent shot at logging another win this season and should contend for a top 20 finish in points.
If a certain car comes up behind you and they're quicker than you, sometimes you have to kind of yield position to them at times, and now I don't feel like I have to do that anymore. I feel like, you know what, I deserve to be here just as much as you do, so you want the spot, come take it from me. If you can't get it, then you can get as mad as you want after the race, but that's how it's going to be.
Tommy Baldwin Racing is sort of a one-car team, but also sort of a two-car team. So maybe we should call it a one-and-a-half-car team. It's not really as confusing as it sounds. In collaboration with Stuart Haas Racing, Baldwin will field the number 10 Chevrolet. Danica Patrick will drive the car in 10 races under the direction of SHR, while David Ruteman will be the driver in the remainder of the races, with the car being prepared and maintained by Baldwin's team. The move automatically assures Patrick a starting spot in the Daytona 500.
For me, I'm just moving forward, right? I'm marching forward, I'm doing what I can, I'm doing the best I can, and one thing leads to the next, and so I'm in the Daytona 500. But then I think of it from my parents' position, and I think about how proud they must be that their kid, their daughter, has been in the Indy 500 and the Daytona 500, like how funny. And then the pride of, you know, driving for such great people like Dale Jr. at Junior Motorsports and Tony Stewart with Stuart Haas. It's like, I think about my family when I think about the scope of what I've done and what I'm going to do.
Baldwin plans to field another car for Dave Blaney. The team's major goal will be keeping the number 10 in the top 35 so that Patrick and Ruteman will keep assured starting spots, a task that shouldn't be a problem considering the available resources.
Tim Greer there, looking at the prospects for the smaller teams, some of the one, or as he said, one and a half car teams that he's just run through. Let me fire some names at you then, Declan. Kurt Busch?
Oh, Kurt Busch. Kurt Busch, yes. Kurt Busch, absolutely. It was his own choice, and it was definitely the right career path to leave Penske and go to James Finch Phoenix Racing. Interesting thing about this is, John, that I think he'll be pretty competitive this weekend. I think he'll be very competitive this weekend. I think he thinks he'll be very competitive this weekend. And that car is effectively running. It's like a Tony Stewart car insofar as that it's running Hendrick everything. Hendrick chassis, Hendrick motors.
Mm.
And it's got him in it. And interestingly, for the Daytona 500, it runs HendrickCars.com as a sponsor.
No.
One suspects that is a, to me, a very much a bit like Ford running Ricky Stenhouse with EcoBoost on the car.
Yeah.
That is almost like an in-house GM Chevy deal where they're supporting him because they obviously, with him getting his motors from Hendricks and getting his chassis from there as well, it's very much a GM. You would almost say that's a quasi-works car.
Even works blessed. Works, yeah, breathed
works,
on.
Works, exactly. A works, yeah, works blessed entry specifically for the 500. And we'll just have to see. Interesting. I think he will make lemonade out of lemons.
Yeah.
This whole year, I think he needs to calm down. Hopefully, he'll learn from his mistakes, and he'll bounce back. But maybe they'll surprise us. They might even get a win along the way. But they could be very competitive on the restrictor plate tracks.
Bobby Labonte.
Awesome. I love this team. I love this team for a number of reasons. They are absolutely beautifully run as a small team. Brad Doherty, that team in general is just. It could not be run more brilliantly. It is a it punches so far above its weight, it's ridiculous. They brought all their sponsors back from last year, and that's an awful lot of sponsors. All big names like Little Debbie's. They've even got my favourite Bubba Burger, who I tend to spend most of the summer eating them outside of my yard. They've got Todd Berrier over from, who was a refugee, as he said, from Richard Childress. They have some pretty hefty TRD engineering staff now.
Yep.
Embedded within the organization. Bobby Labonte is a fantastic pilot. Bobby Labonte will surprise people, particularly on the super speed race. That's where they've got a chance, I think, of certainly getting into the top three. It's a great team. I really, really be pulling for that lot this year. I like them a lot.
Reagan Smith?
Well, what can you say about Furniture Row? Furniture Row do everything wrong in terms of they're running a car from Denver. It'd be like...
What, you mean the home of NASCAR, Denver, Colorado?
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit like that team who tried to run their F1 team from Reykjavik a few years ago. You know, it's kind of bonkers, but it seems to work for them. And they're certainly not heavily financed. Their cars come from the brilliantly named Triad Racing Technology. I'd like to think that's not a... I beg your pardon. No, sorry. That's Landon Castle. I'm sorry. Their cars come from Earnhardt Childress in terms of their engines, which is a pretty solid. He proved that it's a competitive package, and he's a decent pilot. They got a win last year, as we said, at the Southern 500. For any single car team to win against the top teams at a place like Darlington is absolutely fantastic.
And the reason behind that, of course, is that with the testing so highly controlled, a one-car team just simply can't get the amount of testing data that a multi-car team can.
And also, the access. It's also the access to the services. You know, one of the reasons they're all in Mooresville is because they can all get ready access to technology, to testing, to wind tunnel, etc. To be so far away from the hub of what's going on in terms of the talent, the engineering talent that you've got to bring in, or when you're farming things out, for them to be able to do what they do is pretty remarkable. But it also shows you that what can be done with an off-the-shelf package, which is what they've got in terms of what a single team can go and buy their engines from one source, buy their chassis from another.
That's a good point.
They've done a remarkable job. And they are a self-funded team. That's Furniture Row Racing. And besides their Farm Bureau car of Heartland occasional sponsorship, they sponsor themselves. That is clearly a owner sponsor, and it's a fantastic outfit.
Last but by no means least, David Reutemann and his teammate Danica Patrick sharing the car, as we heard Tim talking there. Well, first thing I'll notice is that IMG's media training for Danica has really paid off, both in that interview and the TV previews that I've seen for the Nationwide. She's never said "or you know" once.
Absolutely. That is the whole Tommy Baldwin, David Reutemann lost his job with Michael Walter Bracing and ended up at Tommy Baldwin, which is Tommy Baldwin, another team who unbelievably punch above their weight. And we also seem to have every year Tommy Baldwin seem to roll up for the Gatorade Jewels, needing to race in, and they always seem to do it. And it's also the best story of the day, and one of the reasons I'm looking forward to Thursday so much is that we'll get the next version of that story. But effectively, Stuart Haas have bought that team.
Yes.
Team's ride in terms of the owner points.
Well, isn't that part of the course for Danica? She got bought into the Indianapolis 500 and she's been bought into the Daytona 500. Well, or am I being too cynical and harsh?
No, I think you're being marginally cynical, but you know, when she can say with confidence beforehand that her parents can proudly watch her race in the Daytona 500. Yes, you can say that because the team bought their way in. Let's make no mistakes about it. They bought the owner points, which lock her in to the for the first five races, which include the Daytona 500. So it's a tad disingenuous.
One line on Danica, and it is one line because I want to move on after this very quickly. What do we expect from her this year? Is she a top 20 runner? Even a top 20 runner?
Not in Sprint Cup, I doubt. Okay. I think she'll struggle. I think she's certainly top 20, top 10 in Nationwide. We'll talk about that later.
Okay. We can't say goodbye without talking about Rookie of the Year. In the last few years, it hasn't been a deep and exciting competition over the last few years, Dex. But I'm afraid this year it looks a bit like more of the same.
Oh, yeah. Difficult. It really is difficult to pick out because they're all. It's the weird thing is that, you know, that there'll be a handful, and then somebody will come in and do a few races, and it's one of those things where it's lost its meaning in some respects.
Yes.
Rookie of the Year this year because of how little impact rookies can make. So if you're going to ask me who to pick, I have no clue.
just very quickly on that point, Dex. Does something have to be done to make Rookie of the Year more interesting again? Or is it a case that, in fact, there's no such thing really as Rookie of the Year anymore because so many people come through the ladder system and put their toe in the water before doing a full season that it's almost a pointless exercise now?
Well, there's that. And then there's the other thing, which is guys coming in with little teams who are running with tiny budgets and running a handful of races. And, you know, if things keep going to where we are, the Rookie of the Year in a couple of years will be somebody who's a starting Parker. You know, we're not that far off that. It's a shame, but there's guys coming in. If you're not coming in as a rookie with a big team with a lot of investment, you are literally coming in on a limited program. You're coming in with a small team. You're doing a handful of races. So it really has lost a lot of its luster, the Rookie of the Year in Sprint Cup. It's funnily enough, you're probably better off looking out for the Rookie of the Year in Nationwide.
Yeah, good point.
As a better indicator of ability.
Well, this is where we normally make our predictions for the season ahead. I'm normally wildly wrong as well, but Tim and Nick aren't here at the moment, so we will do our predictions in this week's Midweek Motorsport, so tune in for that. My thanks to Declan Brennan, who has joined us for this brief dash through the runners and riders, well, the main ones at least, of this year's 2012 NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. I'm John Hindhoff. Thanks for joining us, and don't forget, we'll be watching the race for the chase for the cup, for the quest for the thing, right throughout the whole season here on RadioLeMans.com.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, go to www.radiolemans.com. Radio Show Limited. We talk to the world.